Watch this.
So you were here 2015 to 2020?
Yeah, but I was away working quite a bit, so...
Okay.
But definitely...
But you play the odd dart time and...
Yeah, a lot of dart times, until they changed the rules about showing up as a single, which was a bit of a pain.
And you had to register, like, was it the day before at 9 a.m?
Yeah, you
Whereas
could just...
previously, you could just turn up.
Previously, locally, you could just show up at 5:30.
And you're like, is anyone taking it?
Yeah,
you could do it.
You could take it, but now they're just trying to...
It's all just... I don't know. I don't want to... For the dark times, so the St Andrews Links obviously gets extremely busy, particularly in the sort of spring, summer, early autumn. And when you've got a full tee sheet, you'll then have the dark times at the end of the day, which, as the name suggests, means you're not get the links can't really guarantee that a visitor is going to get round in time before it gets dark. And so it's typical that you can't really, I don't think like visiting golfers actually just flat out can book into those unless they're a company and they're taken on as a guest by a Lynx ticket holder. And the dark time's always been great for locals who turn up and chance it. And if you can't, you know, fit in a full 18, you only get 14, 15, 16 in. It's not a problem. It's not going to ruin your day. Whereas obviously if you're paying full whack, you'd want to make sure that you have your full 18. So yeah, Clyde and I were just saying that is like such a popular time to play, or was such a popular time to play as a local, because you just sort of, I mean, I'd finish a lecture or I'd finish like studying in the library or whatever, and then wander down to the first tee at sort of 5:30, 6 o'clock in the summer and just say to the starter, any chance I can sneak out now? And yeah, during golden hour, it's like a brilliant thing to do. And I think you were doing the same by the sounds of things.
Yeah. And now they get filled up with the ballot, which is fair enough. I still think they're a reserve for locals in the ballot process, but you kind of just lose the opportunity to get the same impromptu tea time that you might have otherwise, and it's a great time of day.
Right, Clyde, come on. Teeth on mic, that's it. You're talking to it. You need to be, you know, really intimate with
it. It's uncomfortably close, you know, you want to sort of scratch your nose.
Don't worry, there's no COVID going on here. Let's roll into this. Hello and welcome back to an episode of the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast, brought to you in partnership. Do you know who with?
Footjoy.
Good, Clyde.
Good job I got that one right.
We are sat here with Clyde Johnson. Clyde, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
A repeat. And we're sat in the Old Course Hotel in a wonderful library. I'm joined by Bruce Fitzpatrick.
Good evening.
And Sam Williams.
I'm sat here like a competition winner. Just like weird. Like we're sharing a mic because we've only got 3 XLR cables into the Zoom box. So... we're sat next to each other, so I'll sit quietly for periods of this. I think the really interesting dynamic, obviously today we've played the Old Course in reverse, which is an unbelievable experience. We got thoroughly wet, thoroughly cold, and had a lot of fun in the process. So I think the whole idea is to try and unpack it a bit. And if I'm honest, I'm finding it quite tricky. You know, there's quite a lot to take in, but I think we're quite lucky in the sense that Bruce... Yeah, you've been here for years and played a lot of golf on the links as a student. Clyde, you spent a lot of years in St Andrews. And yeah, hopefully the pair of you are going to put a lot of colour on this. And I can sit awkwardly with a Moretti in my hand while a lot of this goes on.
Clyde, did you go to uni here?
No. Just hung out here. My parents lived here for 5 years, so
all right.
Pretty handy.
How many times do you reckon you've looped here?
Yeah, probably about 100 times probably I've played.
How many have you done?
Yeah, I'd like to think I've got triple digits.
Really?
I think. Yeah. Yeah, over.
So I suppose it's had the biggest impact on you guys then. I mean, it's worth going to you first. Today we played it in reverse, which we're going to talk a little bit about the history about that in a moment. But for two people that have played it so much, how did it feel rocking around it backwards?
Yeah, I guess my initial observation is it's really weird to be so unfamiliar with something that you're so familiar with. I mean, you know, as a golfer and a golf course architect, the Old Course is probably the most influential golf course to me. But then to, you know, despite having ran around the Old Course in the loop path in reverse, walked it in reverse lots of times, it still was really quite strange and uncomfortable actually playing those shots and seeing how they worked in reality. So it was an educational experience.
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly there, Clyde. I mean, I was so uncomfortable those first few holes, partly because I was freezing cold and I then just, you know, rifle hooked a 4-iron out of bounds for my first tee shot, which wasn't
real quick.
Which wasn't enough to, yeah, how it got a great start. But no, I mean, like, it just, as you say, you're so familiar with the visuals of it, but when you start playing in like different directions, I just found it really uncomfortable. On a right to left wind, you know, there's so much jeopardy left on those first few holes in particular, but actually most of the way round. And yet when you play it in the conventional way, the left's actually the sort of safer bet, the safer bailout. And there's kind of more risk and reward kind of going up the right side. That was the thing that struck me straight away. I was like, okay, there's the back left flag on the second, the wind was hard off the right. I only had like a sort of 8-iron in or something. And I was thinking, if I kind of get this slightly wrong, you're going to go out of bounds with your approach shot, which just seems wild.
You wanted
wild.
To be left, didn't you? Yeah. On every hole, you wanted to be left. You know, obviously the conventional wisdom was, you know, playing it normally, you play the aggressive line is down the right and the bailout on the left. And that was, I would say pretty much on every hole was flipped the other way.
Yeah.
Were there any that you thought where that was not the strategy? There were a few where...
It was difficult to tell because, I mean, a lot of the pins were relatively central,
relatively
safe, which probably worked well today for, you know, playing a course you're so unfamiliar with. So that was difficult to tell. But I was surprised by the quality of the individual golf holes. Yeah. You know, like every hole you got to was like, well, this is cool. This is cool, you know. And the biggest observation, well, not the biggest observation, one of the observations I had was how visually discomforting, certainly the back nine, was, you know, a lot of those tee shots were playing blind over some quite adventurous dunes, and you kind of got the sense as to, you know, back a couple of hundred years ago, why they'd want to play the golf like that, you know, where adventure, you know.
Yeah, it seemed more like duney in reverse than it does normally. Does that sound silly?
I think on the back nine, I maybe felt that. Oh, the front nine actually seemed like it was more out in front of you and you could see more of the bunkers from the tee shots. And I don't know, again, I just probably should have brushed up my history, but some of the tee boxes were maybe in slightly different places to where they might be for a true reverse loop. But, you know, like 17, so the second hole, for example, playing down the 17th and the second fairway, you could kind of see all of that in front of you. Whereas when you play the second hole conventionally, it's actually kind of like semi-blind. You can't really see where you're putting your drive as easily there. And you know, like the sixth in the conventional routing, again, that's like a pretty much a totally blind tee shot. But from where we were teeing off driving down that fairway towards the 12th green, you could see the ball land. So it felt like, yeah, in some sense, it was a bit more out in front of you on the front nine, but then quite disconcerting, I think, as Clyde mentioned, on the back nine, like playing over dunes, more blind shots. It felt like you were sort of going over gorse bushes a bit more often.
Yeah, playing the 17th in reverse actually surprised me. It was way more open in the approach than
you
I was expecting.
To the 16th green. Yeah, so when you play...
Yeah, one of the guys I was playing with was pretty tight to the wall, and the railway sheds didn't really influence his shot at all, which I was kind of expecting that shot to feel really intimidating. It was only really intimidating because it was a relatively long approach over broken ground, which is actually really beautiful. And the three bunkers that are left of the second approach that you don't ever really think about were actually kind of much more in play, especially with the wind hurting and off the right today. So,
I mean, a lot of people won't have played the old course, but you know, the exercise that we did today is actually a very simple one, isn't it? The strangest part really is the first hole, which is where you play to the road hole green from the from the traditional first tee box. So rather than playing to a very shallow and wide green, you're playing to a ridiculously narrow green benched into the side of the road.
But the strategy
where
that
you've got to attack it from the literal very, very far left edge of the green to try and remove any sort of jeopardy from the shot. And then you literally work your way back around and you play to the first green as the 17th hole in the playing line of the sort of the second, I guess. Again, strange with a burn on the far left, and you play up 18 from there. And you mentioned talking about it, Clyde. I feel I'm so familiar with the visuals, but yet so unfamiliar with the shots. I think I've played the old course 6, maybe 7 times in my life. So I feel like I've only played it once. But I also am definitely not in your league of I've played this 100 times. So for me, I actually didn't feel that uncomfortable. I don't know what you think, Tom, but because I'm whenever I play it, I'm always uncomfortable because it's always a big occasion for me. It never really felt that uncomfortable, if that makes sense. I felt just as alien stood over the shots as I do every other time I've played the old course. I don't know if that... Did you...
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't approach it from a manner of being like, oh yeah, this is, I should not be here, I should be here. And I don't know, it's a very unusual wind that we had. We had an easterly wind, which basically whips, as you play the front nine, it whips across the course right to left, essentially, all the way down. Which for me, I just felt was a really safe wind because I felt like I could smash it down right as hard as I wanted and there wasn't really going to be... it was never really going to hook massively out of bounds, which is the danger to the left. And on the way back, you're on the left side of the course. Even though it's whipping off the left, you're never really going to be right enough to be out of bounds. So I felt like it was a really safe wind to play in, even though it was like 30 miles an hour. Is that stupid or have I just...
I kind of see what you mean. I mean, I hit a few shots up that safe right side. I thought I was being safe for the first few holes. And all of a sudden, I thought the approaches were quite a bit harder because through the first few, the pins seemed to be tucked sort of middle left or back left as it was on the second. And then it felt like the group ahead was right in the firing line at that point. So I think as we were talking about it, maybe 6 or 7 holes in, it felt quite scary or a bit dangerous in that you were just sort of, you were firing shots down almost down the line of the fairway, sort of on the inward loop as we were playing it today, because that wind was off the right. So you're firing it at groups that were walking towards you and then you were like hitting your approach shots. And if you overcooked it, you thought you were going to run in, you know, bounce it, the ball into the group that was teeing off on the hole ahead of you. So it felt quite claustrophobic.
That's the old course normal way around, is it not though? I mean,
there's a thing where you don't shout. Like, there's not much shouting.
No, they don't shout. The caddies here, I think, are quite deliberate in, like, they won't shout if the ball is not going to hit you. So if it's, like, a few yards left or right of you, they won't shout in case you walk into it. And also because it's so busy, I think it would be quite commonplace anyway. You make a good point there.
It was like Dunkirk out there. Anyway.
Yeah.
It was like Dunkirk.
Yeah,
I mean.
The traffic management around the loop was pretty interesting, you know, to see how those holes functioned crossing over. So
what was your thoughts on the loop? I thought the loop played really different.
Yeah, that was a big difference. I mean, playing back down 12, that's the hole that it's most easy to visualise when you're playing normally. When you're on the 12 green, you look back, it's just like, oh yeah, I've walked past all these bunkers that are blind, you know, in the direction I played it normally. Which was probably why that hole was maybe a little bit underwhelming because I knew what was coming. But then it was
you can't see the bunkers anyway. The way we were playing them now, you think they're going to be right in front of you. But then you're like, I can't really
see them. No.
Yeah, and no, I'd agree with that. So
played a bit funky on the wind for me as well. Sorry to jump in. But I thought, you know, the 12th, for anyone who's not played the old, is a 310 and 320 yard downhill par 4. So you can either big hitter gun it at the green or you sort of pull something left with an iron off the tee into some safety and avoid the bunkers. So I thought, well, I'll just plop a little 3-iron down here and then hit a mid-iron up. I hit a 3-iron, must have gone in that wind, probably no more than about 105 yards.
Then you hit a 3-wood.
And then I roasted a 3-wood, stuck it into, is it Hell Bunker, Bobby Jones's bunker?
Cottage?
Bobby Jones' bunker. Green.
Shell. On the 14th.
Yeah, not Hell, no, sorry, Shell. It's not Shell.
It's
Cottage.
It's Cottage Bunker. Okay. Yeah.
Do me a favour, Tom, in the edit. Look after me there. Yeah, it played long into that wind. So I think that hole was very deceptive on that wind because the prevailing wind, you would never play it like that.
Yeah, but then from the Eden Green, you then play across that. From
that's
the back.
Our 7th.
Yeah, so you play from 12 Championship Tee back across.
To the 8th green and conventional.
To the 10th green.
Yes.
When you first come across, that was a pretty interesting, because there's some really interesting hazards in the foreground there. Yeah. Probably a little bit more, maybe very similar in interest to the normal 8th.
Yeah, you seem to be playing a lot longer though, because
I freewood into that.
It's like 165, but that pin was right at the front and it was right in, you know, into and off the left. So you just thought, I've got to have enough club. Because as you say, there's just, it's like there's so many hazards in the foreground, bunkers and kind of thick marram grassy kind of
It was better than a traditional eighth, wasn't it? I mean, you wouldn't build a par three like the conventional eighth.
I've got a lot of time for the conventional eighth. I think the pot bunker and the shoulder on the approach make the fruit pins really interesting.
Bad about the old course when you sat here, though, Clyde. Yeah. I feel like any time I try and speak up in this, you're going to go, I can't knock that.
No, but there's way more variety to the pin locations there. Partly because of the size of the green, but you know, when they start putting the pin on the back shelf there, that makes it really interesting because it's so hard to get up to it, and if you get up to it, you good chance you go long and back down the 10th fairway.
Kind of hidden, and then you're dead.
It always feels like that's always kind of semi hidden, that shot.
Or they took the pin behind the pot bunker on the left, or they took it to the right.
It's just a slight, I just thought it was a very nice par three. You know, like, I mean, I don't want to go toe to toe with you on that one, but it felt like it was a very, very good par three played from the 12th tee.
I think 9 was probably the most similar hole.
Yeah, I think how you perceive that hole relative to the normal one is all about your ball flight and the wind direction on the day.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, that kind of, if you're hitting a cut, playing in reverse probably suits you there because you're just aiming it out left and then just sliding it in behind the bunkers. Where if you play a draw, you'd probably rather play it the normal way around and play the hole similarly. Mm. I'd think.
Yeah, but it was you kind of then go. 10 kind of comes back. 11, I thought, was the one that we played, 11, which is obviously like kind of like reverse 8, but majestic little par 3. Shorty, like 170.
That was really nice.
Really lovely.
That's a great green.
You're looking like I'm an idiot.
I'm just trying not to sneeze here.
You can sneeze. Yeah,
I'm trying not to sniff and sneeze because we've got pretty wet and cold out there. So
I feel like we'll go down with somebody the next couple of days.
Yeah. Tom will tidy up any sort of like sniffles.
It was that really helped because of the pin position, because it was tucked behind that little ridge. So especially when it was kind of playing across the wind, it was a really fun exercise in judging the flight of the ball and where to land it.
I benefited hugely from you going first there, Sam, because I thought it was straight downwind.
Me too. I underclubbed by 2 clubs there.
Yeah. And then
Wait,
I saw
sure
you come up short.
From.
Yeah.
So I jumped up and but I remember seeing the laying up guys were ahead of us, seeing Sully hit what looked like a half decent shot on the approach, but it just came down the wrong side of the wind and took a massive bounce. Well, yeah, obviously you were in that group as well, weren't you? Like, he took a big bounce, hopped like kind of quite a long way past, but you couldn't chip it short and run it in that easily because the
foreground just takes everything exactly short.
I suppose you could play at that green, couldn't you, from any distance in any direction, and it would be a magical green. Maybe not directly from the Eden Estuary, but with the exception of that, it is a great green. So I guess it doesn't really matter. It's kind of like when we did the podcast with Gil Hans and said, look, did you think about making this for different, you know, to accommodate different holes and different tee boxes like you have? And he was like, not really. We just made interesting shapes. And I suppose you look at that green site and it's filled with interesting shapes. So it's no surprise it just works as a really good par three when played from a completely different direction.
I think that's the story of the whole old course. So it's just a massive area of just brilliant shapes that, you know, especially in links conditions when it's playing firm and fast, you know, the ground influences the ball so much that regardless of what direction you're playing and how intentional the layout is in both directions, it's just really interesting golf.
I think the only hole that I was probably most underwhelmed by, and I should probably caveat that by saying I thought there were going to be some great holes but also some really gimmicky ones, and actually by and large I thought they were all really, really fun, interesting holes. The one that probably I thought might have been the weakest was the 12th, playing to the 6th green. So playing is that right? Down 7th fairway.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That was a really strange look from that
team. Over a gorse bush just to the 6th green. I kind of felt like there's a couple of different options you could maybe take on the tee shot, but then again, not really, because there was quite a lot of gorse, even once you carried the initial bit. And then you sort of left with like 130, 120, or maybe 150-yard shot. Kind of over the gorse bush to quite a really wide massive green. And they just, I don't know, that to me didn't excite me in the same way the next hole did, where there was just more intrigue and, like, you know, you really had to think about the tee shot because of the bunkers. And if you could take it over the bunkers like you did, Mills, you could open up the green and see a lot more of it. And the 13th, 5th double green complex is still really interesting, despite the fact that it's massive. There's like, you can do quite a bit with that.
I thought 11, 12, 13 was the strongest stretch on
them. Oh, really?
On the reverse route, I don't know. Clyde, what did you...
Just while we're on that subject with the 13th green, I really enjoyed playing back down the conventional 14 in the opposite direction. Yeah, I didn't hit a very good drive, so there wasn't that much of a strategic choice for me to take. But if I'd hit a good shot, you know, it's fairly penal going on a direct line to the pin. You had a kind of choice of do you lay back close to the birdies or do you go way out onto the right onto the conventional fifth fairway, you know, especially with the pin tucked behind the shoulder on the left, where it would be for an open. So
that was a really good pin, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, it was. I just thought that the whole stretch, I mean, and I found that the 13th that we played in reverse kind of made a little bit more sense than the 13th. Is it 13th or 14th?
Was this conventionally played?
That you played normally.
Where you have a spine of bunkers almost.
You've got to come and then you go over it, yeah.
What, where you drive into that sort of blind?
Yeah, and you two were a bit shorter than me.
Yeah.
And I just went a little bit further and suddenly I saw everything and you guys saw nothing. I thought that was a great hole.
I actually think that green works better the way around we played it almost. Maybe that's just because I hit it twice.
You can do it both. I think you can do it both ways. I think
it was great playing it as a long one into a left flag, though, is what I'm sort of driving at.
Yeah.
And then playing to that left flag. You know, usually they're the other way around, aren't they, those flags that you're playing to? It was just very cool. Like, it gave you a real appreciation. I mean, you see it anyway. Whenever you play it, you're struck by the size of that green.
The normal 13th hole is a really good hole. I think it's one of the most underrated holes on the old course. It's really compelling, like strategically off the tee. It fluctuates massively depending on pin location, how you think about playing that hole. I actually didn't think that was, you know, playing the way we played in reverse, I didn't think that was that, it was that different to playing the 13th normally. It was just a little bit mirror imaged.
More of an askew,
you know,
angle.
You kind of worried about the two bunkers in the centre that are really deep and a shot penalty, really. And you're kind of playing over broken ground into the green, just different type of broken ground.
I was shocked at how many bunkers were lying at the backs of those greens that I've never really spotted before. You've all done a lot more rounds there than I have. So you'll know they exist. But there's lots of places where our approach shots are like, oh yeah, there's legitimately a bunker in play actually with this approach shot. Whereas you would kind of think by nature of them being reversible or whatever, you know, traditionally, it's not going to be so much of a thing. But there's so many bunkers that you would never really come into play, I don't think, that much on the sort of like normal routing that all of a sudden were, and they were pointed back and it was like, oh yeah, wow, this is right where it needs to be.
But it works so well for the normal routing too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so often like, partly because of the nature of the wind, I ended up behind what's normally the sixth green. And you kind of just thinking, I've had this shot 100 times, just putting up through the trough back towards the pin, you know. So in some ways, there was more familiarity than I perhaps described at the start.
I thought closing stretch was pretty strong. 16, 17, 18. I thought 17 playing to the first green, essentially.
That was a really interesting shot. Yeah. I think how you approach that might have been different, you know, if the approach as we played it in reverse was maintained at fairway height versus seven roof, because it made, you know, because the back of that first green, which is higher when you play it conventionally, suddenly becomes, oh, I've got a really small spot to land on then and let it release down the slope.
Yeah,
before it goes into the water.
Yeah,
you know, as where if it was fairway height, then you'd be thinking, you know, you'd be landing it 15 yards short and taking that risk out of it. Yeah. So
you were so far over on the right. What happened? Because I think this is when you went into mega film mode with no laying up crew. But we were stood on the 17th tee, and you were like right over by the jigger in off the tee down there.
Oh, that wasn't me.
Was that not? No, you? It looked like you'd all gone mega right.
No, I played it. I hit a really nice drive. I was straight down. I was at the start of the second fairway as you play it normally. So yeah. I had a pretty easy angle in relative.
Yeah,
but it was right under a spotlight, that hole, wasn't it? You could take the bail out all day long there and go out right. You go left,
pay for it with a long shot in.
Oh,
long shot into a downslope running towards the burn.
Yeah. I think playing back into the third green, what's normally the third green, so the 15th green in reverse, would have been a popular hole for a lot of golfers because that green kind of sits in that direction, that funky bowl.
Yeah.
At the back, it's normally the back right, kind of feels like it works really nicely.
Yeah.
For that hole, it's more conventional anyway.
And then 18, I suppose, another one that's fairly similar. But, you know, there's not a huge amount of difference to...
The drive was way more intimidating, though.
Playing. Do you think?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, well, yeah, for me
it
was.
I just ended the R&A clubhouse and wailed on it, so it was kind of...
Perhaps that's because perhaps it's my bad shots coming over the top and pulling it left. But
okay, that's
wider. I felt like it was a lot wider because when you're shunted over onto the right side of that hole by the road hole, I mean, it's a spectacular drive. But if you go at the green, like you really are bringing the road into play. Maybe it's because, I mean, I'll be honest, I've never hit drive a 3-iron into that green before.
I was playing long.
We were on that tee for ten minutes.
Clive took about an hour and a half to play that hole.
I don't think Clive did, but
it was nothing to me.
I can't wait. 5-hour golf. It's part of his campaign.
I can't wait to see my swing analysis for that hole.
So we were on there for a bit. Then Steve and David from the Lynx Academy, like, right, we're going to do a face on and a down the line video. You know, one of them behind each camera angle. And then we'll send you a video of your swing with some analysis on after the round. You're thinking, bloody hell, like, this is a stressful enough drive as it is. Not being able to feel my fingers or hold on to the club. Wet. And now I'm being told that my swing is going to be torn to shreds later on.
Right, let's do a couple of bits and bobs. We're going to talk about some more existential things in a moment. But I'm going to put you on the spot. And I'm going to start with Bruce because I want to give Clyde some time. Bruce... Favourite hole on the reverse routing of St Andrews Old Course?
Oof, that is tricky. I would say...
The tension is...
No, I really like one... I can go on this. I really like one and two, actually. I thought one and two, where those pins were. I think Clyde touched on it earlier. You'd love to come back and, like you could see with the conventional old course, I'm sure the old course in reverse would play a myriad of different ways with different pins as well. So we just saw one selection of them today. And on that base, I think the first and the second would stand out for me.
I would echo. That's why I kind of wanted to get in first, playing the road hole from the first. That was the absolute peak for me, personally. I'd say it peaked at one, but that was absolutely superb.
That's probably my answer too. I mean, it's just one of the best greens in the world. It's just like whatever angle you're playing from, it's so thought-provoking, you know, where do you go for it? Which side do you hedge yourself? And I think it certainly adds more strategy to the opening drive than there would be when you play that hole conventionally. There's more strategy to the opening drive, I think, than people realise when they just play it normally. But there's a real advantage for being brave off the tee.
Interesting point, because I mean, a lot of people know Richie Ramsey's a big advocate of golden age architecture and, you know, respectful of the games. I spoke to him briefly when we came in. I was absolutely soaking wet when we came into this hotel. Freezing cold. And I'd sort of said, oh, hang around, we'll do, you know, we'll sort of catch up, have a beer or something. And I think he wants to get back and can't blame him. But he gave me a ring and I said, oh, how'd you get on? And I said, oh, yeah. I said, weird wind, wasn't it? He was like, yeah, it's crazy. He said, what did you do down one? I said, oh, I hit 4-iron and ended up going the burn. He was like, yeah, I just bomb drive it out of the green. So he shuffled it down over the burn, I think, and just chipped up or something like that.
That's
so
amazing.
But you're right, there is a huge amount of strategy to that opening tee shot, because more so on that one, you've got to get far left, haven't you?
Like you go right, you just toast.
It's and, just so
you
know, dead.
You've got no shot in.
Because you've got the road hole bunker there and it's all running away from you and it's shallow. You've basically given yourself the shot into the 17th green, but probably five times harder.
Yeah, a lot harder. But then on the approach as well, like, I get that right to left wind is just savage because it's pushing you in the direction of the trouble. And if you bail and you have the road hole bunker in your way, then, you know, then you've got a really interesting putt. I had that putt of like trying to flirt with going round the road hole bunker to then let the putt kind of fall back down. I just chickened out and it went sort of 25 feet away. Yeah, there's just a huge amount of jeopardy there.
What would you do? I mean, like, I suppose it's hard to say. Did a lot. I mean, I suppose if you take away any of the stuff like the gorse that was in play, I think on a few of those ones coming back, there's a few greens and a few sight lines where gorse, I think, kind of, they can't take it all down just to play it for the reverse. But I get the sense that if it was looked after to the same extent that the conventional routing is, really wouldn't be much between it, would there, in terms of how you'd play that if you were optimizing it for just general play and people's enjoyability. Yeah, is there a case to say that it's just as good?
I think people's perception, certainly when they play the old course in reverse, will be influenced by how the front nine's definitely more open versus the back nine kind of feels like you're playing a little bit more cross country. And some of the jeopardy into the holes is created by the gorse and the maintenance rather than the contours. Going back to favourite hole on the back nine, we're probably playing back towards the fourth green, which again is probably just because it's such a great green. You know, it's normally you're climbing up those three tiers, whereas playing reverse, you know, you're obviously worried about trickling down, and there's just so many, you know, they've got the spines eating in from the side and the bunkers at the front that make that really hazardous and interesting. It'd be an interesting comparison. I don't think the old course in reverse has the same world-class holes or stretch that it does in its conventional wisdom or its conventional form, but it, you know, as a compelling place or a compelling round of golf, there wouldn't be as many courses that are as thought-provoking as playing the old course in reverse anywhere. So that's a testament.
You mean that closing stretch there, right? So when you say that, you're thinking that sort of like...
Well, I kind of...
That last six holes or so where it really crescendos in, you don't think, because you're playing further away from the boundary, there's less jeopardy if you're playing match play. Is that kind of what you're driving at? Or
no, I was just thinking, you know, it's kind of a bit of a crutch answer of mine, you know, best par three in the world, old course 11th, best par four in the world, old course road hole, best par five in the world, old course 14th hole, where you're playing in reverse. You know, we weren't searching that hard to decide which is the best hole. You know, searching quite as hard. You know, maybe that's because in mine and Bruce's case, we're not as familiar. You know, it's, you know, kind of falling in love with a golf course, having played it 100 times versus playing it once, and so differently to how you're used to playing it.
I totally echo that sentiment though, Clyde. I think you hit the nail on the head in that I don't know if this is the right way of looking at it. I can't think of many holes or really any holes that I would swap the reverse hole with the conventional hole number, if that makes sense.
Perhaps that's a good exercise to do the classic match play.
You know, match play against holes. The first on the reverse was kind of what we all went to. But other than that, yeah.
Well, two on the reverse is really, really good, but two on conventional is...
It's a great hole.
So it's kind of like, yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, what we haven't talked about, I'm going to read this briefly just because I feel like I had to. This is kind of some literature they gave us to talk about, obviously, the history of the old course. It used to be played in reverse, and then they kind of played it a little less in reverse, and all the open championships were played in the conventional routing, and they just started using it less and less until about 1904, and it kind of fell away. And in 1978, it looked like it was gone pretty much. They used to do it like once a year. So what the Links Trust are trying to do is bring it back for this is going to be a more annual thing. We really haven't had the opportunity to do this before in our lifetime. I know that chatting to you earlier on, Clyde, you have waited a very, very long time to do this. Did it live up to your expectation?
I think for all golf course architecture enthusiasts, I mean, playing the old course in reverse would be a top 10 experience. You know, it's something I've been certainly desperate to do, and it really did live up to expectations. You know, every single hole, just taking each hole by hole, was more compelling than I probably could have expected. So I'm certainly glad the Links Trust have decided to you know, reopen this opportunity up to people, and hopefully continue to do that, you know, because, you know, even when we're doing the hole by hole, or we're doing the comparison there, we might have seemed to be coming across a little critical, but you know, we're comparing it to the best or one of the best golf courses in the world when we're doing that comparison.
It's a tough benchmark for it to
It's hard
for it to just come out of the embers and all of a sudden go, bloody hell, it's won three up in a match play environment.
So if you were giving someone 10 rounds on the old course, you might say seven conventionally, three in reverse would be a pretty fair split. To how you'd want to play it. You know, the old course is already really, really, really varied in its normal layout, so even more variety, why not?
Bruce, did it live up to your expectation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we just say it how it is, you really can't think of more vile conditions to play golf in than what we had out there today, you know.
And playing on the receiving 30 end mile of me as well, that's tough.
I knew we couldn't help but pigeonhole a reference to Sam Williams's golf in there. Yeah, you did play well. I'll give you your dues there. But no, it was like 25 mile, 30 mile an hour winds. I had five layers on and was shivering the whole way around. Mills, you were even colder than I was. I mean, I felt really sorry for you. The rain started coming in and it was proper pea soup for the last six or seven holes.
God, it was tough.
And yet, I'm so glad that I got the chance to go out and play that and share it with you guys because, you know, like, it's just an opportunity that's so rare and it's like the most famous golf course in the world. And to think that we could play it in reverse, you can't think of... There really aren't many other golf courses I imagine out there that you could do that with. It's just a testament to just the layout and obviously, you know, the vision that Lynx Trust have had and kind of keeping in mind that the sort of history of this place. And yeah, I it was brilliant. Despite the absolutely rancid weather, it was a brilliant day.
Echoed.
The one thing I do hope it does from an architectural perspective is encourages them to mow a little bit more short grass out there and, you know, really twirl. Yeah, just to really open the playing corridors for, you know, for both, you know, for the normal direction too. I think it would introduce even more strategy as well as be beneficial for playing in reverse as well.
Shows where the gorse creeps in, doesn't it, around sort of, I guess, you know, the sort of the early, well, that sort of three to six, and then what would be sort of 13 to 15, that gorse creeps in a little bit more, doesn't it? And
the Lynx Trust have done some really good gorse clearance work over the last five years.
A huge amount out, it seems. Like 14 and four around there.
The ewes had a ton taken out, hasn't it, as well?
Loads taken out.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been able to play seven backwards 7 years ago.
Could you not?
No, because, you know, it was so narrow off the tee, and it was a ball loser for the vast majority of places. That's a sneaky long drive to get to the really wide part. For a long player that can get to the wide part, it's like
the easiest
drive imaginable. But for anyone else, it was near on impossible unless you're aiming way left towards the 12th.
Yeah.
In conventional.
It was quite surreal watching Bryson shovel driver onto the 7th green 2 years ago. I think that's the day sort of ancient golf architecture almost died. I was sitting there in the stands behind that green and just watching him wait for it to clear and just absolutely hoofing
Do that in competition play?
Yeah.
Did he?
I think it was a Thursday. We were sat there. I sat back there for about 3 or 4 hours watching them play that hole. Because I think it's an excellent golf hole. And like you say, it's an amazing green. You're watching them. It's a great corner to watch golf played. But yeah, watching him just...
I'd say that's the brilliance of it, though. It's like, you can hit driver there, but you can get it so wrong.
Well. I think he still struggled for three, in fairness, with him. Yeah. Like, you just...
Like, it's just... that's a testament to how good that design is.
Yeah. But that was incredible. Absolutely incredible. I mean, how did... I mean, just side note here. Clyde, you've been for a shower at the clubhouse. You've gone for a shower in town.
Yeah.
We're at the Old Course Hotel.
Yeah.
I thought our shower pressure was pretty solid. I feel fully rejuvenated now, Tom.
Yeah, I made a real error though. So I put the shower on and then went, the room service knocked, asked for turn down service, which I politely declined. I pottered around thinking I was going to let the shower get really warm. But then the plug was left in. I couldn't work out to take the plug out. So it was filling up and filling up and filling up, like I was filling a bath from this drench head shower. And I was like, that's okay, because I'm going to like warm feet. And then after it's like ankle high, I get into the shower and I realize that it's been cold the whole time. So I'm basically now having a hot shower with an ice bath for my feet. I was so sad. But the shower pressure was really good. What's it like in the clubhouse?
Disappointing and all. Yeah, it was poor.
Which clubhouse did you go in?
Just the Lynx Trust, the new clubhouse.
Oh, the new clubhouse. I thought the news bit was okay for shower pressure. No.
After it's been that wet, you want high pressure, high heat is the only option on the menu.
I mean, I don't know if you're trying to tee up deliberately a segue there for your favourite man that you've met this week.
Oh, shout out Steve, Sam. Who's obviously, well, he's... I don't know. I would say, would you say he's our sort of plumbing correspondent out in America?
Yeah, sorry. So Steve was a guy that I gave some anonymity to a couple of pods ago, but he's now declared he doesn't mind his name being used. And also, I have to apologise to everybody in the whole of Friar's Head when I declared the Fisher's Island had really good shower pressure. It was actually Friar's Head has got really good shower pressure, and Fisher's Island apparently is not the same. But he is our official plumbing correspondent for World Golf. So we have to check in with shower pressure with him. Is shower pressure a big, when you're designing, you know, you're obviously a decent designer, Clyde, do you get involved with the shower pressure when you're setting up routines and dealing with golf courses?
Yeah.
Are you saying like, look, I can provide you a world-class golf course here, but I mean, if the showers aren't up to snuff, there's nothing we can do.
I'm more of a bath man, in all honesty. So,
oh, really?
Yeah,
old school.
So,
that is.
Yeah, look at bath. Soak. So,
no, I don't. Well, there's another couple of bits I've got to tease out of Clyde while he's here. First, when we had Clyde on the pod, it was at Moortown, and we couldn't get him off the bloody snooker tables. He loves it; like, he's an absolute fiend for it. You've been on your travels lately. Any snooker rooms in golf that? There's a few you've mentioned to me today. I think snooker rooms in golf is like a topic in and of itself, isn't it? Any highlights from your travels last year or so?
I haven't actually picked up a cue since we're at Moortown. So
have you not?
No, I don't get to play as much as I'd like to.
Is that because it's just a dearth of snooker tables at the golf clubs and courses you've been working on recently? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I was at Kenema last week. Yeah. They had a tasty looking snooker room. Didn't feel just playing. Didn't feel obliged to go and take the covers off. But I would have loved to.
You'd love to.
That'll give Moortown a good run for its money, won't it?
Yeah, still. I haven't. Long time since I've been to Silliff, but I was the snooker table at Silliff's pretty handy.
Is there one there?
Yeah, there used to be when I was a kid. I used to go up there a lot.
I thought Appleby had a really good snooker room.
Yeah.
With the little white panelling that just sort of sits in there. That was quite nice.
No, of course.
We talked about it. Didn't realise St Andrew's Club.
New club.
Yeah, St Andrew's Club's got a...
Yeah.
Do the new have one as well?
Not sure.
I think they, yeah, I think so. They play competitions between each other.
Yeah, they must. Yeah, they do. I'm not sure if they got one or two. The St Andrew's Club's got two? Or
yeah,
one?
Two.
Two's just a, I mean, you're just elevating yourself to a different level, aren't you?
I think that's the category of Kenema, Moortown, and St Andrews. They're in a sort of fairly. And Hoylake. Hoylake have three, I think.
Oh, my word.
It's crazy. Yeah, honestly, there are top level snooker clubs that don't have three clubs. Hoylake's got three of the bloody things. It's crazy.
You're going to bring back to golf?
I am going to bring back to golf because. I'm just staring at the course planner because they produce these wonderful course planners for the old course in reverse. And I'm actually looking at the gigantic map. Now, interestingly, when you play the old course normally, 1 and 18 are parallel with each other. And I'm looking at the course map and they play across each other. Now, that's remarkably similar to something that you're doing, isn't it?
How long have you been thinking about that one for?
I honestly just looked down and thought about it. I couldn't hold that stuff for long if I'd have thought about it sooner.
Is that something you talk about, Clyde? That's non-disclosure?
Well, we can talk about that. So Tom Doak's new golf course at Cabot Highlands, formerly known as Castle Stewart, will have crossing holes on the 1st and 18th. So that occupies the old, or what's now the old driving range. So from the left of the driving range, as you play it conventionally, you know, it plays across towards the right to a green tucked in a little saddle beyond the far end Scottish Open tee, and then 18 will play from the opposite corner to a green that's going to sit just below the existing clubhouse. So I think just because of the nature, you know, how they cross over, it's going to work really nicely. You know, most people are going to go out in the morning and there's going to be no players coming back in the opposite direction. But when they do, you know, there's good visibility. You know, players on the 1st and 18th will tee off at the same time. And then as they walk, they'll cross over. Not too dissimilar to crossing the old course, really. Yeah. You know, at the loop there when you do it at 17 or 7 and 11. That's normal.
Yeah, and how's it all going up there?
Yeah, it's going good.
Is that what you're spending most of your time on right now?
Yeah, we're back going for it this second season, so I'm hoping to get the golf course wrapped up this summer. Tom will be over later this month, and we'll hopefully get a good batch of greens built. We've already got 7 or 8 shaped from last year, and then, it's an interesting piece of land, good project. So hopefully we'll give a golf course that, or we'll build a golf course that feels Scottish and belongs there. So,
and you did you spend what, 6 months here? 6 months up there?
Last year we kind of got going. Like, the work season's April to end of September, early October. It's partly dictated to by bird life on the bay, and, you know, not disturbing those guys during breeding season or migrating season. So we've kind of started again. We've been working up top on the old driving range, so we've been able to get started a little bit earlier, and then 1st of April today, so we'll move back down to the bottom and keep progressing down there.
Yeah, and the driving range itself is going to be quite a cool little thing, isn't it?
Yeah, we built that last summer. That was really important to that was really important to the client. So built a new driving range, which is adjacent to the old driving range. Yeah, it's got 10 greens that can all be played as a little short course.
Wow.
In as a conventional drawn out routing, but it was a pretty interesting project. It was challenging because it chases downhill, so you kind of had to make the green still visible from the tee while thinking about surface drainage between them, and there was like a mains power cable coming, you know, running through that site as well that we didn't want to disturb or hit. So all the greens were built on, you know, were based on mostly infamous but some famous Scottish links greens. Really? You know, some obscure ones, so like
you haven't gone full CB McDonald, have you?
No, there's really pretty obscure, so like one's based on the second on the Isle of Harris, for example.
Oh yeah.
One's the second at Macrahamish, one more famous one's the 17th at Muirfield, 16 at North Berwick. So
love the fat Isle of Harris. I mean, it just goes toe to toe with the absolute best. Isle of Harris is
a cool spot. Those little touches,
Isle of Harris,
though,
is genuinely one of the best courses I've played.
Is it? Like, were you put out there?
It is. Well, I mean, how many bad green sites are there at Harris? I would say not one.
Not many. The third green's an amazing green. So you play back up the hill.
In par three, you know, there's the head greenkeeper. That's the fourth of par three.
Yeah, so the head greenkeeper.
The head greenkeeper, it used to be just one small punch bowl green that was blind. And he was like, yeah, I just thought it would work better if I just mowed it all in as grass and like closely mown green. And now there's a series of like 4 or 5 bowls you play to. It's like, this guy's a legend. Jimmy Dunn or something. He's Harris is quality. Really enjoyed it.
Just finally, Clyde, because we've taken up far too much of everybody's time, and this is probably the hardest podcast to follow in history, because we've just been talking about April 7th. It's kind of like the 12th background. Playing, you've obviously played a lot of places, and you work on a lot of world class golf courses. Do you still find that, like, if you come here today, for instance, and you play here, are you still managing to learn from the course and take stuff in that you can use moving forward?
Oh yeah, for sure. You're always learning, or always refreshing that photo memory bank of cool golf features.
Because just to remind, if anyone who didn't listen last time, you've played like a million golf courses, haven't you?
Not quite that many, but never as many as I'd like.
Is it 600 now?
It's like 700 and something, I think so. But yeah, this one's I'll have an interesting drive back up north tonight, because I'll spend a lot of time thinking about stuff.
Yeah.
we've done this pod straight off the bat, so, you know, I think perhaps our answers might have been a little bit different if we'd had a week to reflect. Yeah. You know, it's like I was lucky to go and play the Lido in America last year that Tom Doak and Brian Schneider put back together. Yeah, and that was insanely complex. You know, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the old course in terms of its complexity, and it was great for it, you know, but it's just so overwhelming in terms of how it influences your golfing senses. So
it looks like you can't take that all in the first time you play it. You almost have to sit on it for a bit and play it another once or twice to fully get the meaning of it. Is that kind of what you...
Yeah, for sure. I think the first time you play, even today, even though, you know, we've both seen that piece of ground a load of times, you're still... The first time you play, you're just really taking it in. So I think our perceptions would change again playing it.
Do you find it hard to dissociate, you know, the condition to the hole? Because it obviously played differently to us because it was howling and it was freezing and it was raining and it was... Do you find it hard to see the architecture, or is it...
No. Pretty good at looking past that type of stuff. I mean, when you're working in the dirt, you've kind of got to imagine how things are going to play when there's grass on them and when there's wind blowing in different conditions. But today the wind direction certainly had a big influence on how we all probably chose to play those holes. Like it does at the old course anyway. So, you know, I think that would be one of the benefits of playing the reverse more often, is getting a variety of wind and ground conditions that would just... You just see more. You know, there's so much to see out there. You know, every meter or every couple of meters that you move in a different direction, how you think of a golf shot into the green changes. So
you said that on the pod, didn't you? I remember that was really interesting when you talked about that at Mortar, and you were like, well... Most holes have an A and B route, and it's like, well, that doesn't really exist at the old. It's like you have a line and then you move 1 meter that and it changes the whole strategy by a gradient, and then you move another meter and it changes it again, and shot value constantly changes. I think St Andrews Links Trust, they've been doing St Andrews Day for a while as reversible.
For local ticket holders.
But that's only for local ticket holders.
And that's in November.
Then opening up like a bit, exactly, and then opening up a bit of a ballot. I'm guessing if you've played... Not that you have played 100 times, or it's not the right number. I'm guessing, Bruce, if you've played the old 100 times, you've probably played it on that wind a dozen, probably. Not that many more than that, really.
Don't know.
It's not a very common wind, is it?
It's not the prevailing. It'd
be very interesting to see
think,
if it was down and off the left shoulder. Yeah,
normally, for me, it's down and off the right when you're going out, I would say. There's the prevailing wind, and then into off the left coming in is maybe slightly more common than...
Yeah, my experience is it normally always comes off the left, off the west, you know, whether it's into or helping. It normally helps and off the left on the way out.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's my general experience. Right. But
yeah. Almost over the hotel and down to the loop, that sort of direction.
Yeah. But you know, it's really one thing that's underrated is how subtle the direction changes are on the old course. You know, from the first tee to the third tee, there's actually that change isn't that subtle, but it feels subtle because you're in amongst the buildings. It's really hard to work out the wind. But then even as you're heading out, and then you get to the loop.
It sort of bends around a little bit.
You kind of get a taste of what it's going to be like on your way back home for two holes.
Yeah.
And then you have to forget about it really quickly for the next two holes.
Any parting thoughts, gents? What a world-class experience. No, I think almost reflecting a lot, aren't we, really?
Yeah, I think we are obviously a big, big thank you to the St Andrews Links Trust for giving us the invite and putting on just a great couple of days. We've obviously all given it rave reviews, and hopefully more and more people could get the chance to experience it, because it is it's a special place, and it's, you know, one of the best, if not the best, golf course in the world, and to play it in reverse, you just feel very, very lucky. So hopefully it continues.
Yeah, and thank you, Tom, for filming it all whilst getting thoroughly soaked. How do you feel about how the YouTube film's going to look at the end of this?
Certainly not going to be as productive as No Laying Ups. They had a team of, what, three guys?
Yeah, those guys were on it. I think they had two permanent guys and a local guy that was filling in, getting shots from behind the green.
Yeah. Was that guy with that back brace sort of, you know, crane thing that was...
I'm not sure it was doing much image stabilization for him in that wind. It was, you know, it was... And all the video stuff's going to have like that whistling sound as wind goes through.
Yeah. We were. They've been saying that you were really dragging your feet out there.
I was too busy getting out of all the shots.
Clyde, thank you so much for joining us. I know you need to bolt on back up north. And gents, it's been a wonderful experience, and hopefully we'll get to do it again sometime.
Sounds good.
Until next time.
Adios. Watch this.